Here it comes again. Lunch. Will it be the same old, same old? Or are you ready to take a vacation from the ordinary with the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub at Firehouse Subs? Freshly sliced smoked turkey breast, craveably sweet mustard sauce, and a hint of Caribbean seasoning. Just $5.55 for a medium. Save time. Order the new Jamaican Jerk Turkey Sub on the Firehouse Subs app. Firehouse Subs. Enjoy more subs. Save more lives. Participating locations. Limited time only. Plus tax. Prices may vary for delivery.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. Today is April 21st, 2017. I'm your host, Chris Harrington, and I'm excited to have alongside me my new co-host, Mr. Brandon Howard. Brandon, how are you doing?
Good. How are you? You are our glorious chairman of WrestleNomics Radio.
Yeah.
It's great to be with you.
I'm excited to be back. It's the new and improved WrestleNomics Radio with viewer feedback and the content ecosystem that we have created. We are ready to engage each one of the personalities and have influence among their perpetuity.
Yeah. So do we want to talk about, like, are we thinking we're going to do this every other week?
I'm hoping so. That I think would be a good, you know, I think that there's enough wrestling topics every week, but I think if you go every 2 weeks, you can be sure that you grab the good stuff, not just the stuff. So yeah. I'm long overdue. I think the last episode I did was almost 2 months ago when we did the 2016 recap that you joined me for most of. So that was
right. Good. That would have been like the middle of February.
Yeah. So it's been a couple things that have happened since then. One of them was the one that I spent all of yesterday covering in my sleep and in my daydreams, which was the WWE Business Partner Summit. And I got the impression that you watched some of this. I know you weren't live recapping it the way I was trying to, but did you end up watching this or not?
I definitely played all of it. That's how I describe most of my viewing in life these days. I play all of it. You know, I watch Raw. It's on. But no, I watch all of it. I rewatched a lot of it, like the first half of it as well today.
So explain to me this. How long is it? Because it took me, and this is no joke,
it's an hour and a half.
7 hours to recap this thing.
Well, you sent me this Google Doc, and it's like 100 pages long. I was just amazed.
150 pages. Yeah. What? 150 pages with 262 screen caps. You can find that up at WrestleNomics.com, my full recap. I have now recapped the 2015, the 2016, and the 2017. And yeah. I will go on record in saying that besides me, George Berrios, and Michelle Wilson, we might be the only three people to have spent as much time watching and thinking about this thing as it's been out there for the last 3 years, because I've been devouring it. And it's one of my favorite things of the year. I think it's the most underappreciated aspect of WWE's performance, which is they have this WrestleMania weekend, they bring in all their partners and their investors and media companies, and basically it's just an hour and a half of them pitching. But what makes it unique and different is it's not the same spiel that they've given for the year prior. It's kind of the New Year's spiel. And so in some cases, you finally got them to define and talk about things that we've heard them reference, like Super Serve and whatnot, localization. But they actually tried to put it in some context. With that said, I don't know if I've ever listened to so much business mumbo-jumbo buzzword bingo as I can. I couldn't believe how many – I couldn't tweet any of Stephanie's sentences because she was so long-winded every single time because there were so many buzzwords thrown in there. What was your takeaway from this?
It was incredible. So it's like, for people who don't know, this happens every year at WrestleMania in the WrestleMania city. Was this recorded on Thursday, do you think?
I think so, because they talked about NXT being that night. So what night would that be? Friday.
Okay,
night then,
that would have been Friday, right? Because Hall of Fame was Friday, NXT was Saturday.
Okay, it must have been Saturday morning.
I don't know. Yeah. So, that weekend is such a blur now. But yeah, it's like I joke sometimes. This is the real main event of WrestleMania. But it was – so they're in a hotel conference room. We've got like all these people, investors, business partners, you know, people like, you know, probably the people from NBC Universal are there, and Snickers obviously is there, and so on. And it was – I watched it entirely, and I listened to, like you said, all the business speak. I don't remember it being so severe. last year as it was this year. I think I've watched this 2 years. This is the third year that I've watched it, and it was, you know, one of the most horrific things I think I've seen, not just from WWE, but maybe from all of human history. Just the nonstop. Like I said, you know, on Twitter, that Stephanie McMahon's speeches in there. She sounded like she was orating from the Capitalist Manifesto there. It was just such a glorious celebration of entertainment and capitalism and marketing. It was incredible.
Well, I think the coming out party was January of 2014 when they did that CES big launch for the WWE Network in Las Vegas, where they had the whole presentation with all the people in the room, and they had Perkins Miller do the skit with DX, and they had all that going on. And that was the first time I remember one of these investor conferences where there was just everything was scripted to a T of exactly what everyone would say. They brought out all the top executives, and then they tried to integrate the wrestlers, but it's such an odd group because these are business partners. These are not wrestling fans. So the people they bring, so often they're tickled by the fact that they're with wrestlers. You know, if you find their Twitters, they'll say, "Oh my gosh, I met this guy. They call him the show. He's 7 feet tall." And you know, they or like the guy from Snickers who referred to WWE superstar Strowman
Yeah,
at
he was
one
talking to
point.
Braun Strowman at breakfast earlier, and we were just discussing storytelling and what you love about WWE.
And I love it, but at the same time, it's like it's so awkward because they make Asuka go out there in her lingerie wrestling gear and stand in this room with everyone in their business suits, and you
Yeah, so
just
they
feel
had Bayley,
terrible.
Alexa Bliss, and Asuka out there because they're the three champions, and they're celebrating the women's evolution and all that. So they've got all three of them out there in their wrestling gear, at you know probably 10 a.m. in the morning in Orlando, and they've all got you know their championship belts. Yeah, but that and then even weirder, I thought, was at the beginning, or at least you know awkward, was they've got New Day comes out and they do a promo in their New Day, and then they get interrupted by Enzo and Cass. And Enzo and Cass, so they do that promo that they do in their entrance every time, where Enzo does his spiel and Big Cass, you know, does his thing and spells out SAWFT soft. And it sounds so weird with nobody in the crowd singing along, because you've got a you know a few hundred you know white collar workers there sitting in the audience and just in complete silence, who don't know what in the hell they're looking at.
I really think Triple H should make the NXT people do this because there's nothing that's more commitment to your character than going out there to that death silence and doing it. And that would be the best test to be like, look, they were able, you know, if the Vaudevillians did their gimmick out there, then you're like, wow, these guys got some chops. I mean, it's just incredible. And New Day, of course, was there last year too. I remember they opened it up with the crazy clapping and the crazy. So, you know, I almost feel like they owe it. And of course, that played in later. There was five business partners of the year, and it's hard to say whether it's a shoot. You know, whether they don't know they're gonna win. I kind of feel they have to know that they're gonna win because they always seem so ready when it happens. But the five this year were spectacular because in years past, it's always whoever has given WWE the most money that year. So NBCU wins 1 year, Warner Brothers wins 1 year. But this year, the five were the Boys and Girls Club of America, YouTube, Snickers, Fox Sports Latin America, and Toys R Us. And I was just blown away by the fact that the number one person they present, Boys and Girls Club of America, it's all about their anti-bullying campaign with Be a Star. And then number two was like YouTube, which is the company that just enacted the wrestling restricted mode. And I was just like, wow, 40% of your business partners of the year here have really put you in a quite a sensitive spot recently. And so I was just like, wow, it's hard for WWE to say that they don't care about these things when in fact, you know, they're saying that these are two of the most important people in their entire business model right now.
I'm kind of putting on my tinfoil hat here, but like I almost wondered. I think in previous years we've gotten this presentation a lot faster. Like we're talking about, this happened a couple days before WrestleMania, and we only found it yesterday. And even looking at the corporate website with the link that they have for this on the corporate website, it says April 17th. So like, did we just not see it until yesterday? Was it actually there?
I swear I looked for it, and I asked the company directly about it, so
Right.
I find it hard to believe I didn't see it. I
And so I
do
kind of
feel like
wonder
this is when
if
it's
they like
come
sat
out.
on it for a week because of the JBL stuff, and like you said, I don't know if the YouTube thing really matters,
Maybe.
but because you go through it and there's like there's so much. I mean, this company is so into itself and using, you know, almost intellectual business speak. And then you all the talk about how we listen to our fans. There's just incredible levels of you know, unintentional dark comedy and hypocrisy and all that good stuff.
I do feel like this is when it's come out in the past, and I do feel like they've tried to add it on the sly in the past. Because the very first time I found it, I remember I actually found it the day that they were updating it, and as they were doing it, they kept changing the description of it on the website. Because that was the year that
with the philanthropy comment, right?
Yeah, that Stephanie had quoted somebody about the philanthropy as a way of marketing yourself.
Right.
And
right.
It kind of blew up in their faces, and then they edited it out of the video, and they kind of edited off the fact that they had it. But
the tweet is still out there where she says, you know, I think it's somebody else who says it, but she retweets the quote that somebody saying philanthropy is the future of the marketing. And of course, they're talking about this in the context of things like Connor's Cure and Make-A-Wish and all that.
Well, that brings up Michelle Wilson. She talked about her four social responsibility initiatives, and it was diversity and inclusion, education, hope, and military. And it was just one of these things where throughout George and Michelle's speech and the EVP of digital and social, I had the hardest time in the world understanding what were the platforms that they were trying to connect to initiatives. Like, just out of the blue, they said, these are our social responsibility initiatives for the culture of WWE. And I was like, I don't think diversity and inclusion is the first two things that come to mind when I think of WWE's main goals. And it was just really weird where, like, the EVP of social and digital said his three goals were putting smiles on the faces, program platform-specific things, and innovate with partners on social platforms. And I was like, putting smiles on your faces as your digital platform? I guess that makes sense. If your goal is not to make money, then I guess making smiles... I'm surprised it wasn't emoji smiles on the faces, but...
But they have an emoji thing, a WWE emoji thing that they're putting out, right?
It's already out, from what I understand. I found it a couple weeks ago, and I asked about it, and people were like, no, it's out there on iPhones, but I've never checked it out. George at one point talked about his three things were going to be super server audience with the new content in the WWE Network, localization, so that was more about the kind of wraparound shows for the TV shows, like they have in Canada, what they want to add in Mexico and the Middle East, or what they have in India, where there's like local hosts talking about the content, and then engage the next generation of WWE fans. And that one was the most quizzical to me, because they recognize that what they have right now does not bring in new fans, because television is aging and it's such a different thing. But at the same time, they use the most generic marketing speak to be like, well, 20% of the world's population is under 35. People like to watch a lot of social networks. We're going to be on social networks. That's how we're going to engage the new generation. It's multi-generational watching. And I just kept thinking, I'm glad you recognize that's a problem, but I don't really feel like that's a solution you've presented as much as you've outlined that you have an issue there.
You don't feel like what's a solution?
Whatever it is they were talking about for how they're going to engage the new fans. You know, just getting likes on Facebook.
Like one of the things you were putting over, like you kind of said, like I remember them saying a couple times that half the world's population is under 35, right? So I don't know. I think they see that one of the things I got from it was that the future of WWE, which it kind of is already, is the future of WWE is going to be even more international than it is now. I think we're going to see more things like the WWE UK tournament. They're going to keep trying to do maybe localized brands or events, things like that. And I think we're going to see, you know, more and more emphasis on a variety of media platforms. So I think we're going to see, like, and we'll probably talk about it pretty soon, is that I think TV is not just the only way to get fans engaged or to account for, you know, interest and popularity. I think we're going to see more and more focus on things like YouTube or things like social, well, yeah, of course, social media, but more and more ways to consume content, not just on your TV, which I think is a real thing that's already happening. I think that's the thing that accounts for the decline in TV viewership over the last several years.
One thing Triple H talked about is just kind of what they were doing for international recruiting and what percentage of their people came from another country now. They talked about having a giant tryout in Dubai, which was really weird to me, just because I don't think of Dubai as being this mecca of super athletes, but maybe it's an easy place because everybody can get there, perhaps, is the idea, that it's in the center of everything, or and you don't need to have, you know, travel visas that will be so restrictive. And they're also going to do another India-China scouting trip, and they want to have, quote, the most athletic and elite athletes and charismatic athletes in the world. Ed Wells, who is the international EVP, talked. And that's the one thing I do appreciate about this, is that you get to see some people like Casey Collins and Ed Wells and Donlin from Digital, who normally you don't get to see in these meetings. And I think it's really important to see these other sides of the WWE executives. But Ed Wells made a couple really startling claims, including the claim that there's 13 million viewers in India watching Raw every week, and that South Africa has 4 million viewers watching SmackDown every week. And so,
yeah,
that really...
What is the population of South Africa? Is that South Africa? South Africa doesn't have more people in it. I'm going to look it up. Than the U.S., right? Because if you're talking 4 million viewers in South Africa, that's obviously that's more than is watching WWE on traditional television. They got 53 million people in South Africa, and, you know, U.S. has got probably like 310, 320.
Yeah.
So that's like – that's an incredible share.
Well, and I'm sure it's on some kind of broadcast channel, and it's, you know, much easier to get. But at the same time, I also – like someone asked me, what does this mean? And I said, number one, I don't know. Number two, I don't know how they measure that. And number three, I don't know what it means. And so
yeah, a lot of this stuff is like when you hear them talk about their social media numbers, it's just like, yeah, those are big numbers. I don't have any context to put those in to make sense of them. It's just like they may as well be saying gazillions, you know?
Yeah. One thing that got me was Casey Collins talking about some of the things they're doing. And number one was games. Games are very tangible. And I do think that they've actually done a good job of finally getting into a mobile platforming gaming and also, of course, continuing their dominance in video gaming. Number two was toys, and they've continued to really expand and grow in that space, even in both brick and mortar and also the exclusives. But number three and number four were really intriguing. Number three was fitness, all about the Tap Out brand. And this is where we learned that Tap Out is buying gyms in New York City. And all I could think is, like, WWE, again, does not want to seem to learn from UFC's model. And be it Fight Pass or be it UFC gyms... They're insistent on going down. They should have talked to Big Dave about his gym, Dave Bautista, and whatnot. And then number four was retail and talking about the not the EVP stores, but just these WWE sections they had in these entertainment stores and Bootios kept coming up throughout this process here, which was really interesting to me. How often that came up, and include Casey Collins doing the Bootios dance at one moment, which was I feel like it was almost like a rib where they had bet him that he wouldn't do it, or they wrote it in the script and they told him that's what he's doing.
Yeah, so probably.
It was we've talked enough about it, but I say if you have an interest in WWE, go and watch this. If you have a passing interest in WWE business, go to WrestleNomics.com and just kind of zoom through my entry. Look at the screen caps. I think they've done a great job making it a multimedia experience. They clearly spend an enormous amount of time getting this production ready and to a T. And I'm desperately hoping I can go to it next year in New Orleans. I'll pull every string in the WrestleNomics purse strings to see if they'll accredit me. And who knows, maybe you'll see me half-heartedly clapping in the crowd like everyone else next
year. There you
go.
Right, if you just want to see an animated GIF of Casey Collins doing the New Day dance, you can go to my Twitter at Brandon Thurston. You can check that out.
So you were talking about those aging metrics, and you wrote a really interesting piece for Fightful that I finally had a chance to check out today. And it was kind of – I appreciated it because I felt like it was the way WWE would present their information. Being that they would say, we'd like to break our metrics into the young, the medium, and the old, and all these other things. So talk to us a little bit about this piece that you wrote that you can find. It's called Read This Article Before Sounding the Alarm Bell About WWE TV Ratings.
Yeah. So I just imagine somebody reading this article standing right next to the fire alarm for you know, WWE business panic. But yeah. So if you go to Fightful.com, you can find this. I was doing another podcast somewhere, and I was kind of thinking, well, this is an analogy that I think works and makes sense. And I've stopped doing it over the last several months, but on Twitter, I would often put out this graph of it would have over a year's worth of Raw as TV ratings. And if you just look at like a year or 2 years of it, it's a line graph that just goes down and down and down. And it's a image that, you know, it startles a lot of people and it's really interesting to people, and it would get a lot of retweets and people would reply to it and quote tweet and all that. And you get a lot of people.
Real insightful replies too, huh?
Yeah, you get a lot of people saying things like, "Oh my God, I didn't realize it was so bad." Like, "Oh, the WWE has fallen so far." There's a lot more to that story than meets the eye when you just look at that graph. So I guess the point is, I'm trying to make this analogy that we should look at metrics, the point is that, right, that we're trying to assess whether or not WWE is gaining in popularity or, you know, losing popularity or staying the same. And so if we're trying to figure that out, then I think we need to think about metrics in the sense of like having a life cycle. So I went through and you can think about it like there's child metrics. So that would include the WWE network. The WWE network is not a fully mature business. It started in 2014. And if you look at a graph of their subscribers, you're going to see it starts out about 500,000. And here we are in the present, just after WrestleMania, where they had, you know, 1.66 million. And we're not at a steady state for the WWE network.
Absolutely. And I will just interject here. Yeah. I would also remind people, we have about 1 year that we can compare year over year. Because prior to a year ago, almost nothing is comparable because you didn't have the same countries of the world available. You didn't have free schedule available. You didn't have free WrestleMania available. And so there's very little in my mind that you can compare year over year absolute numbers until this year. Q1 of this year is pretty comparable to Q1 of last year. We had free WrestleMania both years. We had India in the marketplace. We had all the other countries of the world already in the marketplace. We had pretty much everything going. But prior to that, every year there's something where I would put an asterisk next to it where they'd say, "Oh my God, look at the jump in 2015. And I would say, "Well, you realize," or 2016. And I'd say, "Do you remember when the UK came online? Do you remember how that impacted things?" And so forth. And so it's very hard to say year over year is the same except for this year. And so if you think about something being less than a year old in terms of maturity, then absolutely that's a child metric.
Yeah. And you're talking about availability. So like the network was rolled out just to the US. And then I don't know, about a year later, then it was made available in the UK and various countries after that, to the point where now pretty much every country except for China has access to the network. If you want to be a subscriber, you can sign up.
Yeah.
I'm talking about an overriding development in media besides that, in that people are still becoming more and more accustomed to technology that's associated with consuming W network, that, you know, OTT technologies
You're exactly right. And I know you say, you know, 2019, 2020, maybe we'll have saturation. I think that's a great point because to me, it's like in 2014, the fact that we had 667,000 on WWE Network and we had hundreds of thousands of people who bought WrestleMania through traditional pay-per-view because they didn't feel that the network was going to deliver in the way that they could get it the way they wanted it.
And we still have some. It's not a lot, but there still are some to this day, people buying WWE pay-per-views on traditional pay-per-view for whatever reason, whether it's because they don't have great access to broadband internet in their area, or or just the notion of doing whatever technology is involved with getting the network set up is just too much for them. Like I said, I think as we go forward, as more and more people get OTT devices in their homes, I think in the next couple years, like I said, maybe not 2019 or 2020, I think we're going to be at the point where, all right, everybody who's going to accept this technology has, for the most part, accepted it, and then we'll finally be at the point where, at least year over year, the WWE Network subscriber numbers are going to tell us something about WWE's popularity. Whereas right now, it's just going up and up year over year, indefinitely until this metric reaches its maturity. So that's number one. That's a child metric, and WWE is a child metric. And then you can look at an adult metric. So what are adult metrics? And those are the YouTube numbers that looks like have just achieved adulthood. like I say in there, they're kind of a young adult, maybe somebody in their early 20s.
And
If we look
I don't
at, go
suggest
ahead.
any of our listeners Google adult metrics unless they have Safe Search
Ooh.
Turned on.
Yes, yeah. Make sure you've got an incognito tab out there. So if you look at all the WWE's YouTube numbers, which they publish publicly as part of their key performance indicators, those numbers just had explosive growth. You know, 500 million per quarter, and then in about 2012, and then by 2015 they were doing, you know, a billion and a half, 2 billion per quarter, to the point now in 2016 we've got a full look at a year where they did between 3.6 and 4 billion YouTube views. So it looks like, well, maybe that metric has achieved its maturity, and now that metric, you know, at least year over year, will tell us something about WWE's popularity. So, and there's other metrics that are kind of new metrics, stuff that's available publicly. It's not necessarily, it's not necessarily stuff that WWE would look at internally, because they probably have better metrics to look at. But I look at Google Trends, which is if you Google Google Trends, and you can type in any
the keyword, and then you can look at the worldwide popularity.
Right, and you can
which speaks a little bit to also to when you're talking about the YouTube views. You know, they keep saying to us that 80% of the consumption of social media is outside of the U.S. right now. 80% of the video views in the non-WWE yeah. network context.
I think it's 70, but yeah.
Okay, 70. But either way you put it, and they talked about India being the largest, quote, social region of the world. So sometimes I think it's tough to understand how can one metric be exploding while another metric is kind of flat. And I do think that there's some elements of country regionality playing into this in terms of I am curious how much of the 4 billion views WWE is getting there. Is that all real? Is that a lot of spam? Is that a lot of search
yeah.
bots? What is driving it? And the fact that it's leveled off, you know, that's really interesting to me to say, is that mean that, you know, we're filtering that out, that we are reaching peak consumption, that we just, you know, it's a fad?
Yeah, who knows? I mean, these are developing markets. India has got however many billion people they have. Who knows? But so if you look at Google Trends, and if you look at Google Trends across the last, so you can look at them going back to 2004 on Google Trends, and you see, you don't see a lot of volatility. If you just look at that, it would tell you that WWE interest is relatively stable. And in fact, it goes up in April 2017 this year. It goes up just about every April, because that's, of course, when WrestleMania is. So you got that. I mean, you don't draw a conclusion off of that alone, but that's one thing telling you, you know, it looks like interest is pretty stable. There's other things like Wikipedia page views have come out now. Those go back to only July 2015. So those don't tell us a lot yet. But then you look at the oldest metric, I think, in all of wrestling history, and that's attendance. And I've got a graph in the article going back to 2006 up to 2016, breaking attendance down by event type. That's going through pay-per-view, Raw tapings, SmackDown tapings, international house shows, and U.S.-Canadian house shows. And you don't see a ton of volatility there.
Well, I would say the one thing that you do notice when you look at that is the international house shows. How
right.
there was a period when international house shows were drawing close to 9,000 a show,
yeah.
which, to put in perspective, you know, 5,000 is your typical domestic show. And
yeah.
then it really started to sink between 2009 and 2012, where you got down to 6,000 or so a show, and it's bounced back closer to that 8,000 range now. So a lot of times, you know, you hear all those complaints from the international fans. Why doesn't WWE visit us more? Why don't they send their resources over here? And for a while, you know, there was a boom. It got really hot in Europe there. And you know, Rikishi could make a ton of money in Italy. And the Ultimate Warrior got paid to come back and all that stuff happening. But then it got cold. And at the same time, WWE also kind of gave up on the Mexico market for all intents and purposes. And so now we're kind of seeing that bounce back in the last 3 years here. But I agree with you. No line goes from 12,000 to 6,000. No line goes from 4,000 to 10,000. Everybody stays in their lane of these five metrics that you mentioned here. Pay-per-view on the top, Raw in the middle, international house shows, followed by SmackDown, followed by normal house shows. And
right.
it is kind of stunning that all five of them don't ever cross one over the other in all almost 10 years that we look at this here, 11 years.
Yeah, and I think if we looked at a picture of, say, the 1990s, we would see a lot more fluctuation, especially going into the late 90s where things really exploded. I think if people are talking about, you know, WWE's declining in popularity, or is it WWE's popularity changing a lot? I think from 2006 to 2016, it's changed very little compared to, I think, the differences in popularity in the 90s. Okay. I don't have any data on hand to back that up, but that's the impression I get.
And one thing, and this is something I've always meant to dig in a little deeper on, is we have this notion that, yes, there was enormous sellouts and action going on in the Attitude Era, but it's also important to kind of call out that they were running maybe 250 shows a year at that time. Then in the later years, they jumped up into the 300, 320, 330 range, and now you'll hear Triple H use a number of 500 something, but he's also including all those NXT shows with 150 people. So, yeah, you know, it's not really 500 shows a year, but there is an element of when you constrict demand a little bit, you're going to improve your house show attendance a little bit, but there's no way you can constrict demand to get house shows back up to 10,000 people a show like it was in the Attitude Era. But it's funny that they actually make more money on live shows almost now than they did then, just because quantity over quality, or quantity over volume per show.
Yeah. So those are examples that is YouTube, Google Trends, probably eventually Wikipedia page views, if Wikipedia continues to make that public, and attendance. Those three metrics I would call adult metrics, and those tell us that WWE's popularity is stable. It's not been declining. And so when you hear some people talk about, some people who are really smart talk about, well, over the last 10 years, you know, John Cena has been on top, but the business has declined at that time. And I don't think that that's true. There's definitely the Attitude Era was definitely a boom, and that boom ended at about, 2001 or 2003. And then we've been in this sort of normal holding pattern ever since. And then one of the things that people look at to justify that business has declined in the last 10 years or so is television ratings. And television ratings definitely have declined over the last 10 years. But the reason that they've declined, at least in the last, I would say, 3 to 4 years, is because younger people are watching less and less traditional TV, including WWE programming. And I think especially in the last couple of years where you've got so many alternative ways to watch Raw and SmackDown. You can watch it on Hulu. You can watch it, the clips on YouTube. You can go to your favorite pirate site and watch the entire show. So I think that's what accounts for, not just cord cutting, but people watching it in, through alternate means of, consuming WWE.
I would love someday to go back and do the math and try to figure out what the value per viewer has been for what they've paid for WWE programming, because I would estimate it's skyrocketed over the last 20 years here in terms of what an advertiser or a TV rights fee is paying to acquire that person. And I'd be curious how that would index against other commodities that have, gone up and down, gasoline or gold or something like that over time, and just see, what would have been the better investment. I agree with you in the idea of the saying, I think that there's a lot of shifting going on, and the interest in wrestling has gone up and gone down. I do think WWE in some ways is much stronger than it was maybe 5 or 10 years ago. I think in some ways it's much more niche, in the sense that once they lost the ability to be on a UPN-type network, they lost the ability to connect with people that were not watching on a non-cable subscription. And I do think that hurts them, and that's one of the reasons that, you are going to see an impact, because not only is it the lack of certain kinds of stars that are going to appeal, but also it helped, to have those alternative avenues, so it wasn't an all NBCU property that presented it, and now it's such a uniform thing. At the same time, I think the idea of a channel identity has plummeted over the last 5, 8, 10 years. Here, where, growing up, the idea of the sci-fi channel is the sci-fi channel had sci-fi programming. And, remember how angry people were when ECW was on that. And now it seems comical to have that kind of affinity for a channel, and the idea that a channel would program itself so narrowly.
Yeah. We said the the Nashville network became Spike TV, TV yeah. for guys or whatever, right?
So yeah. it's a really good piece, and I think it's a good way of kind of challenging people to think differently. And you have this funny little chart from marketingcharts.com where you talk yeah. about the number of hours per week that people watch by traditional TV viewing by age, and it looks like five little snakes kind of running down a hill, because right. they go up and down and up and down and up and down. But you basically show that the stratification by age group is pretty huge, where you have that 65 plus that's watching 45 to 50 hours a week, whereas you have that 25 to 34 that is watching maybe 25 to 30 hours a week. And so it's just very different, where TV is more and more an old person's game.
Right. Because if you look at that chart, it looks like if you're over the age of 50, you're watching TV and you know, streaming stuff isn't cannibalizing your viewership. But if you're younger than that, if you maybe so like starting off, if you're in the 35 to 49, it is, you know, siphoning off some of your viewership. And if you're younger than that, it does so to an even greater degree. And if you're 12 to 17, then you're only watching, it looks like, about 15 hours per week of actual traditional TV, whereas, you know, people in their 50s are watching, you know, 50 hours per week. So one of the things that was written in the Observer a couple weeks ago is, you know, Dave wrote that, you know, there's this thing happening where, you know, the teenage boys aren't watching, you know, WWE as much. He was comparing the post WrestleMania Raw of this year to last year's, and if you look at the demographics, you can kind of see that, yeah, there's been a drop off among younger men, and there's been an increase among women and the female audience, but there's been a drop off among men, and especially younger men. But I think that doesn't take into account that overall, throughout, you know, all of television viewership, that, you know, younger people are moving away from traditional TV viewing.
And I still would say it's an open experiment to see whether or not all of the crossovers with the Total Divas, Total Bellas, the female, the Divas Revolution and whatnot, whether that has led to a incremental female fan, or whether that's just part of the mush, you know, of the normal trends of the coming and going of wrestling fans, once you overlaid the fact that in some ways it improved the coverage of women's wrestling on in areas that, you know, previously were not interested in covering wrestling. So you'd see a Jezebel article talking about the Divas, that sort of thing. Or whether or not, you know, we are seeing more women watching wrestling. Dave's point is it's through attrition of teenage boys. And so it will be really interesting to me if we can ever actually see that merited out one way or the other.
Yeah. Well, I think Dave did acknowledge that there was somewhat of a genuine increase in the female audience. And we can talk forever about what the cause of that would be. But I think there is a genuine increase in the female audience. And you can see that in the way the demographics, you can see that in the way the viewership overall declines and the male demographics decline, but the female demographics hold up better. And that, to me, tells me that the female audience is increasing.
So talk to me a little bit about YouTube. Obviously, one of the big stories going on recently was the fact that indie wrestling channels were acknowledging that YouTube has put their content behind the restricted viewing wall, which means they no longer can monetize quite as well. It's really impacting some of them, they're saying. And then there's this big question going on about would WWE be impacted by this? And I've seen different answers to this. What has been your take and your understanding of did WWE get caught in the net?
I don't think they have, because there's still ads running on their content and there's not ads running on indie content. WWE is in March, at least, it's probably an indication of where they are throughout the year. In March 2017, they were the number 8 YouTube channel in all of YouTube. So it gives you an idea of how important WWE is to YouTube. They do something like 40 million YouTube views per day on average. So they've probably got a preferred relationship with YouTube. So YouTube's not going to make sure that they're taken care of. So for people who don't know what happened, it looks like it started happening in late March, that pro wrestling content started to be moved over to be a to be identified as restricted, or to be put into to YouTube's restricted mode, which makes it so that, well, first of all, if you search in restricted mode, which most people aren't, because you're not searching in that mode by default, but if you search in restricted mode, you won't find very much wrestling content, especially in-ring wrestling content. And because it's in that mode, we don't really know a lot about what exactly is happening and what YouTube is really doing. But the videos that you can't find in restricted mode are also the videos that aren't producing any more ad revenue.
You know, it happened to me the other day, because I was reading on the board, someone gave a rundown of the Big Japan Death Tournament, death match tournament. And they talked about all the guys, and they mentioned a couple matches, and I thought, you know, I'm curious, you know, I haven't watched deathmatch stuff since the 90s, so this, I'm curious what's happening. So I went to look at it, and I thought, you know, if I Google this on my YouTube account, for the rest of the year, on the sidebar, there's going to be all this horrific stuff. So I'm going to sign out of my channel, and then I'm going to look for this. And of course, what happened the moment I signed out of this channel is you can't find a scissors death match in non-restricted mode. Who would have believed it?
If you're not signed in, you're in restricted mode?
I believe so. I think it said I had to sign in to verify my age. And then I was unable to. And so they required an age verification before I could turn off restricted mode, as I recall. Okay. So I wasn't thinking about that in the context of this, but now I'm just kind of putting it all together. I'm also remembering that I watched a scissors death match that's probably going to pop up in my YouTube for the rest of the So, which reminds me, WrestleNomics Radio is sponsored by the Dr. Dip YouTube show. If you enjoy sauces and serving sides, please check out Dr. Dip on YouTube with his most recent episode reviewing blue cheese and how much he and Nurse Honey Mustard hate it.
That's one of my favorite shows.
Yeah, it's a good show.
Yeah. So anyway, with YouTube, there are indie promotions that really rely on YouTube ad revenue. I mean, it's not a huge source of revenue. I mean, you look at what WWE's doing. They're getting, you know, you look at their digital media segment, and it's making a few million dollars per quarter in OIBDA, right? So it's not like this big source of revenue, at least on the WWE scale. But for promotions like Beyond Wrestling and AIW, these are U.S. indies. Beyond's based in New England, and AIW's based in Cleveland. Like these are indies that, you know, they can make, you know, a few hundred dollars or maybe a thousand or two per month from the videos that they've got on their YouTube channel, which, you know, for a small indie promotion is a really big deal, and is really the difference between, you know, making a profit or not.
It's almost
down to nothing. It's not completely gone, but it's like it's really close to zero. Yeah,
it's PWG's last laugh that
you're right.
They're going to be the only promotion making money here, the one that has skewed the digital distribution.
Well, there's a lot of different ways that indies approach things. Like you're saying, PWG is still just selling DVDs. They have a YouTube channel, but they only use it to put out like trailers for their events, which do quite well. But it's probably not a big deal to them. Obviously, DVD sales are. you look at the other super indies, like Evolve is on YouTube, but it's not something that they rely on to the extent that Beyond does, and to the extent that AIW does, and then probably the new What Culture Pro Wrestling promotion does.
That's the one that I was really curious about. Is What Culture has kind of made its own name by the fact that they've been able to monetize everything. I would imagine since it's talking about wrestling rather than showing wrestling, it's going to continue to do just fine. But the What Culture promotion itself might of course suffer. But then again, they also have created a paywall for that one too, where you can.
They're doing iPay-per-views as well. Yeah.
So let's talk a little bit about one of the promotions that doesn't have such a good streaming service, and that's ROH. You know, it's been years since WWE Network has launched. Both Ring of Honor, Impact On Demand don't really have OTT services. For a little while, Impact had a YouTube, I know, service where you could buy certain matches and certain things, and they tried to monetize that way. But Ring of Honor has just had that kind of limited streaming through ROHWrestling.com. And, you know, rumors flying a few weeks ago about WWE wanting to buy Ring of Honor, WWE want to buy the back catalog of Ring of Honor, WWE wants to get the streaming rights to the old back catalog, And what have been your thoughts, and what have you learned as you follow the story?
Well, I know we saw last week that in the Observer it was reported that those talks of WWE and buying Ring of Honor have died. And who knows what will happen. Now we've got Sinclair Broadcasting. Look like it's going to make a big acquisition and open up its footprint. There's talk of maybe Ring of Honor getting on WGN or something like that.
Yeah,
But
if they acquire the Tribune Broadcasting, they just
which they
acquired
haven't
it.
yet, I
No,
guess.
but they it was a whole FCC compliance rule, and they had to get the rules changed, and the rules did change, and then they immediately acquired some other rinky-dink little TV conglomerate. So Sinclair's making moves.
But I look at it's been 3 years now since the W Network launched, and that because W is such the trailblazer for wrestling fans. So you get the W Network out there, and you get all these wrestling fans used to the idea that you can have an OTT service for a wrestling company. And here we are 3 years on, and TNA doesn't have one, or Impact Wrestling they are now. Impact Wrestling doesn't have one, and Ring of Honor doesn't have one. And I think that's interesting. Like, well, I don't know what the good reason is why they don't.
Well,
I don't know if.
let's put Flow Sports in the mix here. So our Flow Slam comes along, division of Flow Sports, and as they go through and they talk to people about, what should we do, what should we acquire, I imagine people say to them, "Hey, have you thought about this Ring of Honor business? This is your best opportunity." I know you and I looked at kind of affinities for wrestling companies, and what came out of that was, if you go on the basis of notoriety and kind of popularity and excellence, at the very top of that list was pretty much Ring of Honor, where something like TNA had a lot of fans knew of it, but they didn't have a very positive view of it.
Well,
And
TNA's had a lot of brand damage throughout its history, and I think that hurts TNA to the point where they can't and haven't for several years now done house shows. I think within really hardcore fans, and who knows what this means for the audience at large, I think Ring of Honor is not as strong as it once was in terms of perception, at least among the
agreed.
hardcore
Oh,
audience.
it's fallen in the last, I think, year and a half here, and partially I attribute it to the fact that there's less exclusivity to their in-ring talent, where, the Young Bucks might be a star there, but the Young Bucks are a star in New Japan too, and every other indie in the world, and every other indie in the world also has television streaming now. So you have that element where I think some of what made Ring of Honor such an interesting, unique thing, we're seeing less and less of it be that, and at the same time, it's almost become a proxy force for New Japan, where people are really excited about the New Japan talents. And granted, there are some great things that Ring of Honor has put on, and some talents there, and having Christopher Daniels has been doing some of the best work of his career recently in the Briscoes and things of that nature. But I think the fact that Ring of Honor and Flow Slam couldn't come to an agreement says a lot too about the management of Ring of Honor, in terms of it's not clear what their end game is. But it doesn't seem to be just a simple money play. It seems to be kind of an all or nothing type thing, where they want to either get out of the business and sell that, or, not really dink around with somebody else.
Yeah, I think Sinclair is happy to have this programming that makes enough money probably to pay for itself, and they don't have to worry about pumping too much money in it in the way of lighting or whatever else, whatever other improvements people would like to see for Ring of Honor. But I think the one thing that's made Ring of Honor less of a hot thing among wrestling fans is that it's not lots of people have said it and can say it better than I can. Ring of Honor is not the Ring of Honor that it used to be. I watch it sometimes, and I think, and I think you went to some of the early ROH shows, right?
I was at the debut show, the very first one.
There you go. And I feel when I watch Ring of Honor today, I feel like if this was called Smoky Mountain Wrestling and not Ring of Honor, I would like it better, because I wouldn't have you wouldn't have this image in your mind of like it has to live up to the thing that Bryan Danielson and Lowkey and Samoa Joe built,
Yeah, no, I agree. I think it's interesting. I think it's interesting that Lucha Underground is now on Netflix. And so for the first time, people, who didn't have El Rey Network, which I have El Rey Network actually on my cable system, I don't have access. So I'm in that minority there where I do get that and I do get to watch it. But I think it's neat that it's on Netflix, but I would also say it's making less of an impact than I think I thought it would. I thought people, would really be over the moon by the fact that, you would have these seasons of wrestling content available on Netflix, and it's not really having that impact the way I kind of thought it might.
Right. Lucha Underground's buzz, it might be wearing off. I say that just anecdotally, and when I listen to people talk about wrestling, I don't hear that much buzz. I know they're off of their season right now, and they're on hiatus, and they'll pick it back
Which
up soon.
brings up the interesting idea there, where we've talked a lot about the idea of wrestling having seasons, and I think Lucha Underground does create this cautionary tale about the inability to prolong the interest, and maybe it's just the fact that it's not the NFL, so it's not that you can build the interest up for that, those 6 months there as much as you can with some other sports. But there is a challenge with wrestling where I don't know whether we've been conditioned to expect it year round or what. I do believe you can have rotation of talent and give people an off season. Not everyone has to work 12 months a year. But I do think that there's something to be said that Lucha Underground has become so erratic that it's really hard to invest sometimes in it because you don't feel like, oh, in 6 months, I want whatever's best, most interesting wrestling at that time. I don't want to wait for a product that's been taped and sitting on a shelf for 6 months.
Yeah, I mean, when you're Lucha Underground and you're only on the LRA network, it's hard to educate wrestling fans' habits when you're not WWE. And WWE's done such a great job of making itself Kleenex or Scotch tape that I feel this way about indie wrestling too. Like WWE teaches everybody what wrestling is, and so I guess the point is to teach people that there's a season for wrestling. Like there is in the NFL. Like everybody knows that the NFL season goes from September, and then the Super Bowl happens in January or February, and that it's been that way for decades. And when you've only got a handle on a very small part of the wrestling audience, like Lucha Underground does, it's really hard to educate people in that way and to create new habits. If WWE, woke up tomorrow, Vince woke up tomorrow and decided he wanted to do seasons of some sort, he would have a lot more power to do that.
Agreed, agreed. So we're getting towards the end of the show here, so we're going to do our quick hit section. This is where we're going to give each person, Brandon and I, about 1 minute to pitch something we've read about or written about or interested in, and we'll go back and forth until we run out of topics or run out of time. I'll go first. Number one, I'm going to say is Vince's hair. A
Oh, yes.
crazy article I read on Forbes today talking about Donna Goldsmith, the former COO of WWE, who has apparently really soured on her time there. She seemed much happier when she was first interviewed, and in frequent interviews, she's kind of dropped back. But she ends it with this crazy story about how Stephanie McMahon gave her an envelope with Vince's shaved hair from WrestleMania, from the Battle of the Billionaires, and Donna had no idea what to do with it. Stephanie said, maybe you want to use it in merchandising. And then she just eventually threw it away and described WWE as a kooky place to work. So that's my first
How
thought.
long was she with the company for, you know?
Many years. She was right
Really?
before Michelle. I want to say 6 years or so. She was kind of like she was the hot thing before Berrios came around, and
Okay.
Michelle Wilson was very much kind of a right arm person. I don't know whether it was the Linda kind of really getting out of the business or what, but. Ian Frisch's article for Vice also interviews her kind of extensively, and she's kind of come out of the woodwork in recent years. Her and Michael Cilic, more and more, the former CFO and the former COO. Anyways, that's my quick hit. What's yours?
Let's see. There's a good article on, let's see, is it ROHworld.com? This is written by, I'm going to try to pronounce his name correctly, Lavi Margolin. It's just looking at what happens if Ring of Honor is, with Sinclair acquires Tribune and what that means for Ring of Honor. And that could mean anything from finally getting coverage in New York City, LA, and Chicago, to getting on WGN, to just being sold, but, sold out to W or whatever it might be.
And I'm glad you brought up that article, and I'm glad you tried to pronounce the name, because I also was unable to figure out how to say his name, but I appreciate
sound it out.
Yeah. My quick hit, me versus NYSAC, that's the New York State Athletic Commission. Back in August, I asked for some Freedom of Information Law records about WWE touring in New York State from 2010 to 2015. I was hoping maybe I could find some commission records that said, here's the paid attendance, or, you know, medical, or just, I was curious what they had, and it said I could ask. And so far, the commission has repeatedly delayed. And my most recent delay was so egregious that I basically wrote them a letter saying, I think that I can count this as dismissal, and I can appeal this action now with the Freedom of Information Office, because you have failed to deliver anything. And I received back a letter saying that I would get my information in May of 2016. I wrote them back and said, I hope you understand it's May of 2017 that you probably meant. And they agreed that was what they meant. And they promised me it would be there. So maybe in a couple shows from now, we'll see whether or not I have my commission records from NYSAC, or whether they're going to admit that they've never kept them after all. So we'll find out. I would love to. I'm going to feed you what your quick hit is. And I want to know more about Eric Bischoff's IRW. I have no idea what this is.
Well, so do I. This is just something I heard about yesterday. I guess he's doing – it looks like this site was launched a few weeks ago. IRW – so Eric Bischoff is behind this thing called IRW, which stands for Independence Rural Wrestling. If you go to IRWnetwork.com, you'll see it's a website that's very much in development. They say it's – you know, they're doing beta testing for it. But they put out a tweet I think yesterday, saying, you know, if any indies who are affected by this YouTube ad revenue thing, you know, DM us, and you know, maybe we'll work together. And Beyond Wrestling was on Twitter today and said, yeah, we DM'd them and they never got back to us. But it looks like Eric Bischoff's trying to do something maybe sort of like Flow Slam, in that he's trying to put together a bunch of indies and put them on one site. Powerbomb TV is another one like that, and to you know, bundle them up all into this one network where you can get a bunch of indie wrestling. I don't know. I'm not terribly optimistic about it, because at least versus YouTube, because YouTube is this thing where you've got, you know, billions of people looking at it, and to just get people to a site because they're wrestling fans is a really different story.
You know, and I want to say Eric was also behind the Matt Rats experiment in the early 2000s. So it's easy to kind of scoff at the idea of Eric Bischoff and independent wrestling in the same sentence. But he has tried before to kind of see if he can be on the forefront of ideas. I don't think this sounds like it's the forefront of ideas, but it's an idea. And he's always been about, you know, syndicated media opportunities with him and Jason Hervey. So who knows what's going to happen with that?
It's weird to go on that website and like, to know Eric Bischoff's behind it, and there's a lot of like championing of independent wrestling. And it's like, I don't know. I can't imagine Eric Bischoff, like, you know, firing up a WWN Live and like watching an Evolve pay-per-view or something like that.
If you had said it was Vince Russo's independent wrestling network, I would have believed it a little bit more. So yeah, it's a little weird. I kind of thought Eric wanted to be done with wrestling at some point here. So who knows? I guess the only last thing I'm going to say for my last quick hit is just going to be lawsuits for WWE continue. Today, Bix and I were trying to figure out, WWE filed 101 exhibits, as far as we can tell, they're all just news articles, so there's nothing interesting. But it was really weird, because it was a little bit like the business conference. They were filed on the 14th, but they didn't show up until the 20th, and so we didn't even notice them for a little while there. But we're trying to figure out what that was. I did find the WWE schedule, and I got that published a couple weeks ago, where WWE did its anti-bootlegging lawsuit. They got it sealed so that nobody knew it happened, and then when it got unsealed, I was able to find it and get that schedule out there. And so I thought that was pretty cool, finding that again, knowing I still can't find the one from Texas from last year. So not quite sure what happened with that one. But WWE still continues to do this anti-bootlegging lawsuit where they give them a schedule for the full year. Fortunately, this year, no arena capacities, no letter
no
grades
attendances.
To cities, no
yeah.
attendances. But, you know, anything's better than nothing. So I always love the fact that there's some things there. And as Bix and I have discussed, we think WWE may be a little bit more careful about what they file in these exhibits, knowing that there's some prying
yeah.
eyes of myself
oh, yeah.
and then I'll Bix over at Deadspin.
They know you're out there.
Yeah. They know. They see us when we're sleeping. They're the Santa
yeah.
Claus of the internet.
They know the Gotcha Media is about to get them.
Do you have a last hit here, or are we ready to sign off?
I don't know. Well, if you want to talk about athletic commissions, I don't here I'll kiss up. You know, Sean Ross Sapp has a article about the Kentucky State Athletic Commission and all the things that they've been through with the IWA Mid-South and how they require wrestlers to have
blood tests.
You know, And licenses, like you have to have a license before you even start to train in Kentucky. It's crazy. And New York State is another one where I could go on and on forever about the New York State Athletic Commissions and the many expenses that they inflict on independent promotions in the state. But maybe another time.
Another time, indeed. And I certainly have no love lost for NYSAC myself. I remember when I moved to Minnesota. My first thing, I was like, well, what does it take to get to run your own indie fed here? And they're like, nothing. You just do it. And I was like,
amazing.
You must be joking.
Amazing.
I don't have to file a fire plan, have a doctor on site, an ambulance on call, and $25,000 worth of insurance from a kickboxing broker in California.
Yeah, we have to have an ambulance now. It's insane. You have to drop like, you know, $1,200 to $1,500 right off the bat before you even pay talent. Another time.
Another time. Well, this has been revamped WrestleMomics Radio. My name is Chris Harrington. You can find me on Twitter at Mookie Ghana. If you want to reach me by email, chris.harrington@gmail.com. And WrestleMomics.com is my blog. That's where you can find that 262 snapshots from the WWE Business Partner Summit. That's going to be my plug for the week. Check that out. And with me is Mr. Brandon Howard.
Mm-hmm. This is part where I do plugs?
You sure do.
Yeah. If you can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston, BrandonThurston. I write for Fightful.com. I post a few things a month at least on Fightful.com. If you go into the features section, click on Brandon Howard, you'll see everything that I've written in chronological order. You can email me if you want at Brandon@Fightful.com. I'm a wrestler. I train people too. Graphs Anonymous here in Buffalo, New York, Lackawanna area.
Do you also cover Tonawanda?
I live in North Tonawanda. What do you mean?
I'm just trying to show my regional knowledge Buffalo.
That's right.
This has been WrestleNomics Radio. We are a member of the Voices of Wrestling Network, and we are proud for their support and their help over the years here. You can check us out. We're going to be coming back weekly, bi-weekly, very often in your eardrums, 45 to 60 minutes of WrestleNomics Radio. Have a good night.
In a world of 1 million wrestling podcasts, there is a new shining star with great interviews, analysis, music, and me, Matt Kuhn, on Total Engagement. Go to any podcast platform to listen today.